keen on being right at the edge of technology, even when they were new. You'll find what we have here is a wafer fab that is absolutely on the leading edge of technology. In fact, it's probably the best wafer fab in the world today, from the capability of cleanliness point of view. It won't stay that way long because, you know, other people are building fabs as well. But this is a fast-moving business, and technology is perishable. So you have to keep running and running faster in order just to stay even.
I appreciate your time. I'm not a technical journalist or high technologist or whatever, so I may ask fairly basic questions. Sometimes I find those are useful as well.
Okay, no, that's fine. We'll try to give you useful answers.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Non-technical to the degree that we can.
I wonder if you just tell me a little bit about, I think our time here is relatively limited.
Yeah, we have about 15-20 minutes.
You can, as far as I'm concerned, you can have as much time as you want. Okay. We'll try to make that.
But just tell me a little bit about your side of the operation and how much has changed or hasn't changed at all over the last few years.
Yeah, Digital's been in the semiconductor business in one form or another for probably almost 20 years, starting with being a design house internal customers, and then about 16 years ago moved onto this site with its first own wafer fab one in the building next door here. Since then we now have gone up to 6 fabs, each with succeeding generations of technology capability. We have 2 fabs on site. We have Fab 4 and Fab 6. Fab 5 is in Scotland, and we just recently sold that to Motorola, and they'll be taking possession of that at the end of our fiscal year, which is the end of next month. So basically, we have 2 fabs, a 6-inch fab, Fab 4, which is running half-micron technology, and that's running our latest chips, such as the one that you see on here. You got one of these?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You brought a wafer, too. Okay, good. This is our latest second generation alpha chip. This is it's got 9.3 million transistors. It's the first chip that does more than 1 billion instructions per second. As you can see, it's a large chip. Like I said, it had 9.3 million transistors. It's made in half micron technology in Fab 4. Half micron, in layman's term, is about 1/200th the diameter of a human hair. So each transistor on here, about 200 of them will fit inside a human hair, looking at them that way. Half micron is also about the length your fingernail grows in 15 minutes. So if those are useful analogies for you.
Mine don't grow that long because I bite them every day.
Oh, okay, yeah. All right. Well, you can see how many calories you're getting per unit time here. And that's a 6-inch wafer. Our new wafer fab, which is around a $450 million investment, is an 8-inch wafer fab, and it'll go through 3 succeeding generations of technology. Now, a generation of technology lasts 3 to 4 years, so we've made our big investment in wafer fabs for the next 10 to 12 years. And for expansion in that fab, it's incremental investment for incremental add-on volume. So basically, we've made our big investment, and I think that's a key message here. And like I say, it'll take us down to 0.18 micron, which is about the limit of optical lithography. And where we go from there, we'll be making a decision on that in, around 5 years from now. But this is a key business, and it has been a key activity for Digital since its inception, because we can provide Digital with some advantages in the microprocessors that we can't get outside, both in terms of some of the things that we do in design, and some of the things that we do in the technology implementation itself. In addition to that, we're a relatively small volume supplier, and at these big foundry fabs, you don't get much attention when you're that way. With our own facilities, we have the ability to have significant time-to-market advantages by doing this ourselves. So there's a market advantage, there's a technology advantage in terms of what we can do with it, performance and functionality and so on. We've been a captive supplier to Digital up until about 2 years ago. We became a business unit. We've started going out into the external market. We're building a number of products for the external market. We are selling some Alpha chips on the external market, but we're also building peripheral chips, PCI peripheral chips, in the networking and in the graphics area, in the bridge area, primarily those areas. And while the PCI bus interface, a new standard that's been promoted by Intel and a number of other people, including ourselves in the industry, is really catching on, we have been leaders in this PCI peripheral area since we've entered that market and have significantly the largest market share for those products. Now, I'd say that's a growing market, but it's a market that's going to be the lion's share of the computing market, especially the desktop market, as we go forward. And those products are useful on whether it's Alpha machines or Intel machines or MIPS machines or whoever's machines. So that's been a big market push for us, and it is helping to fill a lot of the capacity that we have. The other thing that we did is that we've signed an agreement with a company in the UK called Advanced Risk Machines, ARM for short. This was announced last February, and they have a low-power, low-cost RISC architecture, a very clean one. And so we're taking that low-power capability, we're implementing a new set of ARM microprocessors with using our design techniques and technology, physical technology, and so on, and manufacturing capability, so that we will be able to supply virtually millions of these in the market. This is the microprocessor that drives the Apple Newton, as an example, or Motorola's Marco. Sharp uses them in set-top boxes, and they're used in a number of places in the industry. But it's a very small chip, opposite this very large chip. It's about 1/10 the size of this chip, maybe 1/15. And so there's a lot of them per wafer, and they can sell at a very low price, and it's more or less a consumer type of product. So that's a new area we're getting into, interestingly enough.
That's sort of contract manufacturing?
No. We're designing it. We have a license to the architecture, it's our design, and we're selling it on the marketplace, in the open marketplace. And like I said, we've been working with Apple, so we will be supplying their next generations of microprocessor for the Newton. In addition to those, some of those other products I was talking about, in addition to the set-top box interactive video type of application, that we can do that product using our technology and have a product that has the same performance as a 100 megahertz Pentium, but it does it at half a watt and sells for $40. Mm-hmm. 100 megahertz Pentium is like 8 watts and sells for $500. So this is going to be, I think, an exceedingly successful product for us.
So these are basically ways you're planning to use the capacity.
Right. We're expanding our product base. To things that are saleable in the external market.
I don't know if there's such a thing as capacity for these. You're talking about this next fab plant, Fab 6?
Yeah. Yeah.
So is there some theoretical capacity, and what percentage of it does Alpha make up?
Well, it has a capacity of 3,500 wafer starts a week if you fill up the complete shell with equipment. But that we built it that way on purpose for expandability. We have not facilitized that entire shell. It's as you will see, it's more contained than that inside there, running right now at a lower rate. Mm-hmm. At most of that right now is we're bringing it up to qualification. It'll be qualified by the end of this calendar year. Mm-hmm. So running production.
And maybe I'm not asking the right question, but so in other words, 3,500 wafer starts per week would be the maximum.
Right.
You know, at some point in 5 years or 7 years or whatever.
Right.
If you've only sort of outfitted half of it or three quarters of it or whatever with equipment.
Less than that.
Mm-hmm. And then so what's the expensive part of the process? Is it equipment or is it that?
Well, the equipment is the most expensive part, yeah, in investment. And
is that like an empty warehouse shell or something?
Part of it is, you'll see, in just a little while. It's a little better than your average warehouse.
Not bad. It'd be a little isolated from shacks.
Oh, yeah. And Rich can give you all the details on that as he takes you through the thing. But you can buy then, as we've done it, you know, we can then install additional pieces of equipment as we see our volumes building up. Mm-hmm. And so this is essentially it's a relatively inexpensive way to assure future capability. And we generally build our fabs to accommodate multiple generations of technology. So what we have in that fab, if you take this, which is built in our existing fab, a particle around the size of a bacteria can kill one of those chips. So the cleanliness requirements are pretty stringent. In the new fab, as we get into future generations of technology, where the feature sizes are even smaller, particles the size of a virus can kill a chip. So this is built with that in mind, so that as we get into those, you know, future generations of technology, the fab's already set up in place to be able to, it's already that clean, you know, to handle that size of particle.
So you had, but you were building the Alpha, I mean, Fab 4 as well.
Right now, yes.
And you will be moving it over to the next one then?
We will be building next generation Alphas in the new one.
So is there anything in the new one now?
We are running test chips for qualification. We run basically memory chips to bring the process up and to qualify the process. We're also running some of these half-micron alpha microprocessors in there to gain some experience with real product and make sure it's going to run on those. Mm-hmm.
So Fab 4 is more basically filled up, as it were?
Yes.
So the idea is that you spent whatever it is, $40 million on the next one?
$400.
Is it?
$450.
Yeah. Right. So the idea was, you know, you got to get your investment back. So you have
to. Oh, yes.
And so shifting the next generation of Alpha. So how do you, what's the plan? In other words, can you fill this up over the next couple of years?
Well, we won't fill up the entire building over the next couple of years. We certainly will fill up what we have facilitized in the building. And we're looking at a number of different options for filling up the building, but the total fab itself. And one of those is the fact that we are aggressively pursuing expanding our own product base, both through our own design activities and then licensing designs and architectures from the outside and bringing those products in. The other thing is that, you know, we are looking at the possibility of a joint venture partner to come in here and utilize part of that. And we've been having discussions for some while now. So that's a possibility for the future as well. As you know, the industry is short of capacity at the high end. And so we think that there could be, a good partnership fit here, where we're not particularly competing, but we both have an interest in lowering our cost of energy.
So, if you didn't get a joint venture partner 2 or 3 years from now, how much would it build up?
It wouldn't all be filled up, but that wouldn't stop us from being a profitable semiconductor business unit. And we are one of the official business units of Digital, and it is the intention that all the business units of Digital will be profitable.
So how do you be profitable? You're talking about including the amortized cost and the quarter that you need?
Absolutely.
How do you make profitable?
By selling them. And that's why I say because what we have there is a small, relatively small fab inside of a large building. The building, the shell of the building itself is not the really expensive part of this thing. That incremental additional shell. The expensive part is the clean room itself and the equipment that you put in the clean room. We will have, within the next 2 or 3 years, sufficient revenues, both from our internal customers and our external customers, to be a profitable business unit. Mm-hmm. Whether or not we have a joint venture partner, that would be great. Let me show you something about just a couple of things here.
Well, I just mentioned one other thing about these devices. They are the 9.3 million transistors, are the most complex microprocessor in the world. runs at speeds up to 300 megahertz, which is the fastest way to process from the cloud. So it's not just yet another complex method processor that's significantly advanced compared to any of the competition.
Mm-hmm. I think this is an indication of some of the things that's happening internally here with regard to Alpha. These are Alpha Systems revenues. And this was the year that it was introduced. This was the last year, last fiscal year, which ended last June 30th. And this is this fiscal year, which ends the end of next month. And as you can see, we had about $1 billion in sales last fiscal year in system sales, and around $2 billion that will hit this fiscal year. And this is a slide or a graph here of the applications that are running native on Alpha in Windows NT, Digital Unix, and OpenBMS. Now, if you go look at the product mix and how that's changing, this goes back to, this is dollars, billions of dollars here. This goes back to 1990. The green is our VAC sales here, and the blue is our PC sales. As you can see, it skips over to 1994, 95, and next year, 96. And again, this is fiscal year, not calendar year. And this, as you can see, our VAC sales are declining. At the same time, our PC sales are growing significantly, that's the blue. And Alpha sales, this is the $1 billion last fiscal year. This is the $2 billion this fiscal year. And this is a projection by Solomon Brothers of $4 million, $4 billion in Alpha system sales in the next fiscal year. Considerable growth, doubling year over year. One of the things that in a computer company that you have to go through every once in a while is an architectural transition. And for every company that's gone through that, it's been very painful. And a lot of the companies have, you know, fallen and never gotten up. A number of the companies have gone through these things and have recovered their sales and customer base and have become continuing to be quite successful. And I'm going to show you three transitions here, three architectural transitions. And what we have here, this is sales in this, and we're going to talk about Digital, IBM, and Hewlett-Packard. And this is the year of introduction of the new architecture. This is the next year, and this is then 2 years after. And this is sales of systems with the architecture. And if you see HP here, at the year of introduction, they did of their HP PA architecture, 230. The first year afterwards, 445. And the second year afterwards, $617 million in sales. IBM's Power architecture, year of introduction, after 1 year, 2 years. Not very good growth on either one of those. And this is really Alpha's tremendous success story. Year of introduction here, the first year after, and the second year after, $2 billion. That's this year, so we know that's going to happen. And the next year, they're projecting $4 billion. This is a tremendous growth curve and a tremendous recovery story. It beats the hell out of the architectural transition of our two closest competitors. They're painful to go through, though. Seriously painful.
What does $2 billion in Alpha Systems translate to in terms of numbers of digital copies?
It's about, 10%.
10% of the value of the system is actually
in the microprocessor. Something in that order. So as you can see, as the system sales grow, the microprocessor sales grow as well.
So you got 10%. Is there some readily?
I wouldn't use 10% as an absolute, but it's in the neighborhood of there, depending upon the size of the system. For
right.
Small systems, it's a higher number, and for larger systems, it's a smaller percent.
Uh-huh. But is there some number of semiconductor? Microprocessors that translates to?
We don't generally talk about the number of microprocessors that we sell, although you could go and look at what Palmer has said, that we have sold over 100,000 systems, over $3 billion worth of Alpha systems.
So each system has one?
No,
just one.
We have up to about 8.
Everything is somewhere on the table. Plus region, one would presume.
Somewhere there.
Since most sales are single, I would presume.
So we think that's a pretty good story.
Mm-hmm. So all these people who are, I'm not a person who really follows that closely. I'm sort of very, very, general
supplies that I've gotten over the years, when I had to look at those things. Gee, these guys went out, they spent all this money, and they got their own, you know, wonderful architecture, and nobody else has adopted it. How are they possibly going to make it pay off, sort of thing? So the answer is, what is the answer?
The answer is, we're going to sell enough of these to make it pay off.
Uh-huh.
That's the answer. You know, digital is gonna do well with the alpha architecture and system sales. And I think that's already being displayed. We're gonna do well in that because we're part of that. In addition, we're doing some other things that are significantly increasing our semiconductor volume in the peripherals area and in the strong arm area.
So that was a sort of covering overhead, or, you know, or just
incremental revenues to cover the investment. And it's a relatively small incremental investment to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. It's a big investment up front, building itself, the system. So what happens the next Fab 7?
We won't have to, because this is going to take care of us for 10 to 12 years. We don't have to start thinking about that in about 5 years.
It's a fair long time, considering how fast this industry moves.
Yeah.
But if you knew in hindsight what you know about the fact that Alpha hasn't really become the industry standard, then that you've had to sort of fill up the plan with other things, would you have done it differently? In other words,
conventional thinking around is that this alpha thing should have taken off like wildfire. Okay, because it's so great.
Uh-huh.
That was never our thinking. This industry has enormous inertia. Give an example. The VAX ran out of performance gas in 1985. That sales peak in 1989. There's enormous inertia in this industry, and the inertia is caused by software. It takes a long time when you come out with a new architecture to move enough software over to make it interesting. I mean, nobody likes to buy a Jaguar and park it in the garage. And that's what you got here. You got a Lotus. You know, this is a very high performance engine, and it takes, you know, it takes moving the software over here to get people to buy it, because it doesn't do anything without the software. So this, you know, we entered this knowing full well what it was going to take, and that this was going to be a long term, it's a battle of attrition, it's a house-to-house fight, however you want to look at it. It's not a blitzkrieg.
Uh-huh.
And we made the investments knowing this at the time, and knowing what it was going to take, you know, to succeed. Terms of how much overtime that we're going to do it. We're in this business for the long term. This alpha architecture is a long-term architecture, and in fact, I think you probably heard that this is going to last for the next 25 years, and it is. That's why we came out with 64 bits instead of coming out with 32 bits. And all our detractors were saying, oh, hell, who needs 64 bits? But you know what's happened? They're all making 64-bit processors today, and they're not having such luck. And if you look at the performance of their 64-bit offerings compared to ours, that's pretty puny. If you look at a performance scale here, and this is time, and this is performance here, this is the Intel curve, this green curve here. This blue is sort of the industry risk curve, and this red curve is the digital curve, and the alpha curve. And you find here that this was our first generation product here. This part up here, this EV5, that's this part right here, our current generation. Here's our competition here. They're not only late, much later than us. They're lower performance, significantly lower. Look at the P6 here, it's half the performance. Look at the PowerPC, IBM's PowerPC 620. They're what they've been really beating their chest about. It's puny performance compared to that. Puny. This is all their 64-bit offering. They've announced, these guys have announced these things. They haven't even seen silicon yet. But they felt that they had to get out and announce something because we have something in the marketplace. So, you know, if you look at where is this thing going, this part of the curve down here is what you saw on the other sheet. We had to change scales.
This is EV6. This is the next generation, and this is going to be out in 1997. Okay. If you look at this is going to be more than 1,000 integer spec mods. You know, this is about in the same time as the PA, HP's PA8000. It's pretty thin. And then we have generations even beyond EV6. This architecture is a long lifetime architecture. Well, it's key to the future of having that, so we don't have to put our customers through another transition for another 20, 25 years.
So, the answer to the question of what you would have done in that current situation?
We expected the current situation.
You expect something rosier than the current
situation? Finally? No, I think we expected the current situation in terms of growth. And again, if you go back to the history of the thing, in terms of growth of new architectures in the marketplace, we have exceeded anything our competition has done in the past.
Why isn't it becoming more widely adopted?
It takes time to do that. It takes time to do that. And it takes the applications. Again, it takes a lot of applications to do that. But that's happening. As you can see here, over the last 3 years, the growth in native applications and where that's going. Now, let me tell you something else where this thing is going. There's another point that we can make here. You got sheet of paper. And that's with respect to operating system. If you look at Microsoft's strategy for their operating systems, DOS and Windows are moving inexorably over into the low end. Windows NT is moving from the high end over time into the mainstream. And it's expected to be the mainstream operating system for Microsoft by 1997-1998 timeframe. A desktop. Mainstream desktop. And this is their announced strategy. This operating system is platform independent. It's independent of Intel. And it runs on any other platform that's ported. It is ported to Alpha. So that we're making products that are going to run on the desktop in this time frame that have the opportunity to be very, very high volume. I'll tell you something else. I visited a major pharmaceutical company. I visited a major pharmaceutical company to talk about how to change production for that.